Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and I'm here with my two co-hosts, Ivy Joeva and Alexi Gilmore, and our two guests today, the Zen Mamas, Part 2, Sarah Wright Olson and Teresa Palmer. How did pregnancy feel for you, Teresa, your first one?
Oh, I was just obsessed with it. I loved it so much. I've been prepping to be a mom for a very long time.
In what way?
You have to believe me. Like when that, during that dark period, that my only saving grace was reading baby books.
Oh, really?
Like from the age of 17. And so all I've like read every baby book under the sun, just because during that period, it's all I would do, because I've always wanted to be a mom. So when I finally got pregnant, I was extremely excited about it.
Did you guys work during your pregnancy? Did you act?
Yeah, I shot films right up until I was 8 months pregnant.
Were your characters pregnant?
No, I played like a homicidal, crazy, like maniac when I was 8 months pregnant. I mean, it was horrendous. And she was not pregnant. They had to try and hide it, and they did a very bad job of it. Because you watch it and you're like, she's straight up pregnant. Like, why don't we talk about this in the movie?
What is that movie?
It's called Kill Me Three Times with Simon Pegg. I'm like a psychopath in the film. God. And I had to go home and talk to the belly at night time. Like,
well,
that's not really mummy.
Loves you. I was 9 months pregnant and I came and worked with Teresa on a movie.
Yes, you did.
I was like due to give birth.
You had him like, oh, I swear to God, a week and a half later.
Totally. Really.
Was that character pregnant?
Yes.
Okay.
It had to be. Yeah, I mean, good Lord.
Because you make big babies.
There was no hiding my pregnancy. It's crazy. With my pregnancy with Wyatt, I worked so much through like very random things throughout my pregnancy and hid it up. Well, I could only really hide it up until 4 months. And then I had a little lull. And then I did this movie with Teresa. But, you know, this pregnancy, I definitely took some time off because of personal things that happened this year.
The media seems to love bumps.
Oh, God, tell me about it.
And I have patients that come to my office. Nobody cares about them at all, you know, for 3 or 4 years, 3 months pregnant, and it's an obsessive crowd of media stream. Not everybody feels amazing, right, during pregnancy. You look different, you're growing. What is it like to have additional media scrutiny while you're pregnant?
You know, I think it's like, it's not just that. And it's something that I'm really working on right now is scrutiny from everyone. I think you have to be really careful and to comment on a person's body. And, you know, it's interesting because it's a lot of men I've noticed that will shout out something like, whoa, are you carrying twins? And they think it's so funny. And then it's like, you know, the more you hear it, it's like each one of them thinks that they're the first one that's ever said it to you, right? It's like, oh my God, are you due today? Whoa, what's in there? You know, just like the comments are endless. But there are days when I think I'll hear it 10 times. And this pregnancy is the first time that I was ever like, okay, enough. Like, I'm done. I don't want to hear this anymore. Like, this is, and why do you feel like it's okay to come and touch my belly? Why do you think it's okay to like tell me how huge I look? Like, it's not nice.
Societally, I don't understand it. I mean, usually you give people some space and their boundaries in general. You would think that during pregnancy, hey, give her a little more space and have even more boundaries. But it just seems like an invitation to just speak your mind and touch your belly.
It is. And it's, I mean, literally some of the people look so shocked when they see me. And that's fine. Like, I get it. I grow big babies. I carry on the outside. My belly is quite large. And I'm tall, and so it looks like a, you know, this big bump on a tall woman.
It looks fake, Sarah. I mean, I'm just looking at you now.
That's okay. I don't mind that. But I was walking through this restaurant, and this guy stands up, and he looks like a deer in the headlights. And he literally, I just come from an appointment with you, and I felt so good. This was last week. I was just like, oh, it's the best I'd felt in weeks, and I was so relaxed, and I was just like daydreaming about the birth and all this stuff. I was just going to pick up food for Wyatt. And this guy stands up and he's startled and he looks at me and he goes, you look so uncomfortable.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my God, really? I was like, I feel so good right now. Yeah. And then I walked into the restaurant, sat down to grab the food, and the guy that manages the place walks by and he goes, we're going to have to call a nurse today.
Oh, God.
I was like, okay, that's it. I'm done. I can't do it anymore. And I went out to our social media for Your Zen Mama and was like, okay, tell me all the stuff that people have said to you. Like, this is what I'm hearing. Tell me what's being said. There's almost 300 comments on there, women yeah. being like, thank you. Yeah. This is what I hear every day. And it's crazy to me that people think it's okay.
My wife was so upset a couple of times. You know, she's in great shape. She looks great. And then she carries really out like you do. Same thing. Yes. It looks fake. I mean, I'm looking at you right now with the way the table is. You don't look pregnant. And if you stand up, it is almost shocking because you don't look pregnant. If you look pregnant everywhere, then that would go with it. It's just the contrast. So
yeah.
I could see on the one hand how people are just like, whoa, you know, but it's also like have a filter. And for her, I just remember one time we were dropping our 2-year-old off at preschool and she was almost due. And someone said, wow, you look huge. And she's like, you look kind of huge yourself. And she wasn't pregnant. And the woman got upset at her. She's like, you can't talk about it like that. I'm not pregnant. And she's like, well, why does it make it better than I'm pregnant? It's,
yeah,
it's something that needs to change. We need to change that.
You shouldn't even assume that someone is pregnant. I mean, I am always like, careful, I do not say anything, even if I'm positive. Because one time I worked at this retail store in New York years and years ago. And this woman came in and she did look pregnant. And I just was like, didn't say anything. She was shopping. You could tell she was feeling down about her body. And she's like, oh, nothing really fits. And so finally, my manager came over and she was like, oh, well, when are you due? And she goes, I gave birth 3 weeks ago.
Oh, that's the worst.
And it was terrible. And I was just thinking, like, when you're saying that, it's like, yeah, it's even more terrible after you give birth and you know, you still have your body is adjusting and, you know, has been stretched out and all these things. So, yeah, I think we all have to be super sensitive mm-hmm. about just...
That's a great point. In general.
In general,
and then I can only imagine magnified with media following you around.
Well, the positive side is the people coming up to you. I mean, the positive side is women being like, oh my God, you're glowing. When's your due date? You know, it's like that's part nice. Of it. You feel like, oh, they're embracing. Like they're so, like that's a comment. Like comments like that I get all the time too, which are fantastic. And it's so fun to hear that. It's like the negativity is just,
After the 100th day. I was at playgroup with Bodhi on, and I knew that there were paparazzi there because they usually follow me from my house. And I was like, oh, this sucks because I'm now the one bringing cameras to a playgroup with my friends and their children. And so I was like, felt this big burden. So I was like, I'm just going to leave a bit early. So I like left and they're taking our picture and Bodhi's asked me about them. And then the guy like stops me, one of the paparazzi, and he was like, oh, you know, like, I live on your street. Like, that's why I'm always following you. And I'm like, oh, cool. And he's like, you went to Cafe Gratitude this morning. You go 4 times a week. Blah, blah. And I was like, what? Okay. He's like, oh, just so you know, the reason why there's been more of us lately is because you're pregnant. And the photos are worth more money because you have a pregnancy bump now. So more people pick up the pictures, that they get paid more money. Mm-hmm. So then... like actors and, you know, actresses get photographed more when they're pregnant.
Yeah, I remember during your first pregnancy, I was walking with you one time and there was this big paparazzi stream and I felt so bad that you got caught in my media stream.
Thanks, terrible. Dr. Bain.
Although I saw some of the pictures the next day and you look amazing and I just look like me.
I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, it's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and use your code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.
Well, let's talk about childbirth. How did you get ready for the first birth? You were both excited about it.
So excited.
You went first, Sarah.
Mm-hmm. I was there.
You were there.
Was that her birth?
Yeah, we went to each other's birth.
Yeah.
Oh, you went. She was at mine too.
Oh,
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
So you went to each other's births. Had you been to a birth before, Teresa?
No.
That was your first. Okay.
That was my first. Anna was pregnant at the birth.
You were pregnant, and
so I was like, "I'm about to do this." Oh, cool.
So in the end, you switched. You went with a midwife and had a home birth.
I did.
And how'd that go?
It was amazing. It was so bananas. I think preparing for it was, it's interesting. Like, there's the book, Anime's Guide to Childbirth is something that we've talked about a lot. But that book, for me, hearing other women's stories, because they're so different. I mean, anything that I could find online, but I loved reading these stories from like the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. It was just so cool to watch this sort of history of birth and sort of, you know, feel a part of it in some way, like, you know, oh, I'm going to be doing this and, you know, oh, maybe it's going to be this way, maybe it's going to be that way, you know, and some of them sound, you know, really, really wonderful magical. And magical, and I was like, well, it's probably not gonna be that way. but most of it, it just, I don't know, it was so cool for me to read it and daydream, what is this gonna be? And I tried a lot of stuff. I mean, I was like, you know, I was reading all about hypnobirthing, and I sort of did like a not a full on class, but I like got, you know, I talked to somebody, and then I was like listening to a CD, and then once I was actually in labor, because I didn't commit to it, listening to it just made me crazy. I was like, we need to turn that off. Like, that's not working for me, because I did not put the time in beforehand. But you know, preparing for it was just like reading as much as possible, talking to my baby. And something really cool that, you know, maybe it was coincidental, but I feel like it wasn't, I feel like it was on purpose, was that I was due to give birth on, I mean, my due date was that coming Saturday. And my husband found out that he was going to be off for the weekend, and it was a Wednesday. And so that night I was like, okay, if you can come this weekend, Daddy will be off and we can spend 3 days together, right? And that would be so cool to like have the birth and not to worry about work. And the next morning I woke up and I was having contractions, and I was having them all day, but they were very light and mild. And then by midnight that night, I had full on contractions and ended up having him the next evening.
Friday.
Friday at night. Like 7:45.
And you had a bunch of people.
I had a bunch of people, yeah.
Who was on your crew?
I had my husband, who was so amazing through the whole thing.
Amazing.
I had Anna Paula Markel.
Your doula?
Was my doula. And I had my lovely Zen Mama partner here, Teresa, who was taking pictures. It's funny, we called Teresa, I mean, pretty much at midnight. And I was like, look, I don't think I talked to you. Eric talked to you, but it was Eric, like, it's... Yeah. Started, but you know, take your time. We got a long way to go.
And like, she was there in like 30 minutes
immediately. She was there for the whole ride.
She was like the paparazzi. I live on your block.
Yeah, right here, Sarah.
Open your door.
Yeah, and my midwife was there, and Casey came. And Casey came like the next day.
Yeah.
Like hours
like
before.
Like 4 or something. Yeah.
She was like 4 and I had the baby at 7:45. So she was working that day and then she came by later. She came for the finale. I basically like.
Yes.
Good move.
I knew she was there fanning me at some point, but I was very.
You were out of it.
Yeah.
You're out of it.
She went to another place. It was amazing to watch.
Sarah, go into another place. Yes. Transform. You got out of your head. So you had Wyatt. He was how big?
He was 9 pounds 8 ounces. Wow. Yeah.
Healthy
big,
boy.
Healthy boy. When I was 9 centimeters, what worked best for me was being in the water. I dilated from 4 to 9 in like 4 hours, and it was just. It was this thing that my husband was doing where he was holding my head above the water and taking my body, and he was like swaying it from one side to the other side, and it was just going back and forth, and he was in a squat position, no joke, for 4 hours straight. Mm-hmm. And it was crazy. Every time he needed to like stand up, I just latch onto his arm so tight, and I do not move. Because this is the only thing that feels so good, you know? And I remember there was one point where I was very, very quiet throughout the whole birth, but there was one moment when I said, oh no, like I just felt this big one coming on and I was like, oh no. And Apollo was like, no, Sarah, say yes to the contraction, you know, make it bigger and stronger. And then I was like, yes, you know, and so like started incorporating this yes word into what was happening. And then that's when things really started to get, you know, moved along. But I had to get out of the water. My water hadn't broke yet. And my midwife broke my water at 9 centimeters. And so the baby came down against the cervix in a weird way. And the cervix started swelling. And so that's when I felt the urge to push, but I had to push for like 4 hours of her massaging the cervix to help get the head past and everything. So that was a journey.
A little hiccup at the end.
Little hiccup, yeah. Little stickiness.
No, what about, because I saw Teresa soon after that. And no, I saw Teresa and then I saw Casey. I'm not sure. Casey was like PTSD.
I'm pretty sure.
And then Teresa, I was. You both were.
I went home and cried to my husband.
Oh,
I said,
yeah.
I can't do this. I can't do what she just did. It was amazing. Because she was just this like lioness. I was watching her and the way she's just handled everything and the waves that were coming, and she just went to this beautiful place. And I remember just saying to my husband, I'm not strong enough. I can't do what she just did. And I bawled my eyes out that whole weekend.
And Casey,
it was such a glorious thing to witness.
Casey wasn't pregnant.
But became pregnant soon after.
She came soon after, but I think she had doubts about ever having children.
That's what she was saying to me. She was really affected by that. Yeah.
She's like, I'm never going to do that. And cut to like a few months later. She's like, and I'm pregnant.
You can't be the one. So what happened? Then you did have a baby soon after that.
I did. Yeah, 6 months later. So I had a few weeks to move through my own fear surrounding birth. And then I had the same midwife as Sarah. And, you know, I had tried to manifest the birth I wanted. It was going to be 8 hours. I knew the day he was going to come. And then everything went the complete opposite to how I envisioned it. I was like, wait a second. What? My water broke? Like, I was 38 weeks. My water broke.
What week had you envisioned?
Hanky Panky.
Oh, during Hanky Panky.
It was Hanky Panky made it happen. And
but
I was
not,
like,
whoa. Not trying to make it happen.
No.
Just trying
My husband was like, yeah. And I'm like, no, that's my water breaking. And then
he's like, I'm good.
He's like, oh, patting himself on the back. I was like, no, honey, no. But yeah, it was so strange because I had read all these books, obviously. I had gone to my hypnobirthing classes and read all the Ina May Gaskin books. And so I expect just to go straight into labor. And then I just never went into labor on my own. And I remember going in to see my midwife and she's like, well, the clock's against you now because your water has broken. You need to get this moving. And so I had to have an acupuncturist come in and do acupuncture, and that didn't work. And then what did work was I drank castor oil.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I do the whole swigged cocktail, like with the orange juice and
vodka?
The whole vodka.
Yeah, I did. No, there's no alcohol in it, but I just swigged it, and then like immediately it was like, oh, I'm going to be in the toilet for a little while.
I always and have then mine with vodka.
Straight away.
Yeah.
But my contractions just started straight away. And then
right after you drank the castor oil?
Within half an hour.
Within half an hour.
I was like, wow, that really does work.
Yeah.
And then I really enjoyed my labor. I labored at home for a really long time. Unfortunately, I couldn't get in the birthing pool when I wanted to because my water had already broken so early. And so I was able to get in the water later on when I was like 9 centimeters.
You didn't have a whole team of people in there.
I did.
You did.
I had Sarah was taking pictures and just being an amazing support. I had my husband, I had a doula, and the midwife.
Okay.
So
you're just missing a few people.
I was just missing an extra friend.
Yeah, a lighter crew.
But it was real. I found some positions that I loved. Like Sarah always says, how funny it is that I found this one position in the shower on the birthing ball, like with the hot water coming down. And she was like, you were like orgasmic.
It was so amazing. Because she kept running her hands through her hair. She was being like, oh, this feels so good. You know, Mark, her husband, and I were just like cracking
oh my
up
God
together.
It was the best feeling ever.
She was so beautiful.
It was so good. But then things like again went very differently to how I thought, and then by 10 centimeters dilated, my midwife was really worried about the time because he had been out of the water now. I think we were going on 34 hours.
Oh, wow.
Like it was a really long time.
34 hours since your water broke.
Yeah, can you just, because some people might not know what that means.
Well, once your water protects, your amniotic sac protects the baby from bacteria. Okay, once the sac breaks, now there's a portal of entry for bacteria to get in, and time is against you. The longer you wait, the more likely you'll get an infection. Plus, it's not really water. It's like if I was a bacteria, I would want amniotic fluid as my breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's got all the nutrients. It's warm. It's static. It's a great medium for growing bacteria. So
Right. That's
the concern. I see sometimes in the hospital to buy you more time if you want to go this route, some of the practitioners will give you IV antibiotics. So you can sort of minimize the risk of infection and keep going, but then you have the downside of the IV antibiotics.
Yeah.
So
I was at the home, I was at the house, and then my contractions just stopped at 10 cent. I could feel his head, and I had zero contractions.
Really?
For almost an hour, I'm like waiting for a contraction, but his head's right there. So I remember, I don't know if you remember this, Sarah, I was trying to push on my own without a contraction.
Uh-huh.
And then Davey was like, look, the combination of having no contractions and also he's been out of the water for so long, I think we should transfer.
We could see his head.
Yeah, we could That's see crazy. His head. I was like, I'll just push it out. Like, no, this isn't going to happen.
Was there no thought of a second swig of castor oil at that point or too late?
We had an acupuncturist come in and that didn't work. And then finally we're like, all right, let's just get
she
in the car.
No. To the castor oil.
Yeah, again. She did. Yeah. Right. I don't remember. But then I got to the hospital and then I had this fever. And so.
That's what they're worried about.
Yeah, that's what they're worried about. And then they were nervous that there was something that was going to be wrong with the baby because I now had a fever. They didn't want it to transfer onto him. So when I gave birth, I pushed him out in about 30 minutes.
They gave you Pitocin?
Three units of Pitocin.
Maybe.
Wasn't a lot, but it was enough to kickstart some labor contractions. I felt like the pushing stage went quite quickly. It was 30 minutes and then, but immediately he was taken, like they cut the cord. He was on me for maybe a minute and then they took him off and took him to the side and checked him out and he was fine. And
it was because of the fever. The NICU team was standing right at the door waiting for the baby to come out because they were just going to put him on the panda. Was that what it's called?
Yeah.
The little, yeah.
The little warming tray.
Yeah, the warming tray.
Although you have your own warming tray.
True.
But you were happy with your hospital experience.
I loved everything about my birth. And for me, the greatest gift was that it just set me up for motherhood. I mean, not having expectations and just being present and in the moment and allowing whatever happens to happen. that was, for me, I was like, oh, that's the reason why my birth went this way, because I just got this beautiful lesson.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Because also you, I have to say, like, as soon as I got there to your house, I remembered seeing something that just made me laugh so much, because it's so Teresa. She's so organized and together about stuff. I mean, well, you are, like,
with some things.
You like to put out there, like, so there was a big orange poster board on the wall, and
the dot points.
Yeah, and it had everything that needed to, like, be done during labor to help her during labor, right? And so it was
things
like
that I could look at. In case I needed my check-in.
What is it, you know, what can I do to help myself through this?
Yeah, it was like crushed eyes.
I love that, though. You see that usually at a home birth, and it's beautiful to just see.
Well, I had it from my husband.
I kept taking pictures of it. I would like kept trying to take pictures of it and get them in the background, you know?
Doing the items on there?
Yeah, it was just like such a cool thing. But
Mark told me he literally referred to it. He was like, the ice cubes. All right, I have to get the wet flannel. I gotta get that thing. But yeah, that's how I am. Like,
I love that.
And it's funny because I feel like Sarah and I had really different experiences, because she went to this like other cosmic space, and I felt like I was so in my body, but I was like, here comes the contraction. How many centimeters am I dilated at this point? Okay, all right, there's another one coming. Like, I was so...
So you were like straddling like in your neocortex, the rational part of your brain that's thinking about things, like, but also jumping back to your limbic system where you just let your body do her thing.
Yeah, like I was definitely straddling the line. I wasn't just like, let go, let it happen.
Do you want to let go this time? Or do you like that?
Yeah, I think so. Gosh, it's going to be really hard because of my personality.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're more zen now.
I would like to try and let go a little more.
Sarah's not going to be there.
Sarah's not. She might now. She might Sarah now. Sarah might be there. I might have to birth in America this second time around.
Terrible.
Oh, God.
I would be very excited to be there.
I know. That'd be amazing.
I think, I don't know what the pros and cons are both, but you said something that's really important in general for people planning a birth. And Ivy, as a childbirth educator, I think also, you know, there's two points I want to make here. Number one, the medical community has medicalized childbirth so much that they've taken what should be incredibly good things, inherently good things like epidural, like cesarean, like forceps, any of those interventions should inherently be amazing, because somebody who needs a cesarean and has access to a cesarean, there's nothing greater than that. To be able to safely get that baby out in 3 or 4 minutes time, whatever it is, it's just amazing. It's life-saving. But when you overuse it, it all of a sudden starts to do more harm than good. And that, you know, so that's part A. There's so much pushback against those things. And I don't think there's anything wrong with a hospital birth. That's where you feel safe and comfortable and supported. Go have a hospital birth, you know. But there's a lot of pushback against hospital birth because their cesarean rates are so high, because they over medicalize. But you had a great hospital experience. And the other part of it is the birth plan. Everybody's like all about the birth plan. And there's this rigid, I got to do this and I can't do that. I'm going to do that. But I think over time, what's evolved for me watching so many women give birth and is that it's really a flowchart. Mm-hmm. It can't be a rigid plan. It's a flowchart. You start with the most natural birth you can envision yourself having, or that you want to have. You know, for some people, it's out in a horse trough with a mud puppy.
I would love that at some point.
For other people, it's at home with a midwife, or at the hospital with a midwife, with drugs, without drugs. Maybe it's an elective cesarean, which I also support. If somebody wants to does the research and says, my comfort zone is elective cesarean, it's your body, your baby, I support you, I'm behind you. But you start with the most natural one you want, and then it's a flowchart. If I have to do this, I'm going to do this. Or if I have to make a choice, this is a choice I'd like to make. And every flowchart, every birth flowchart ends in cesarean. It has to, because sometimes you'll need to go down there. Mm-hmm. And if you do, then you didn't fail. Your birth plan didn't fail. Your birth plan was to have your baby at home, but you didn't have it at home, but you didn't fail, because your plan always was, if I needed to go to the hospital, I'm going to go. And you still continue to have a strong, empowered, supported birth.
Yeah, I feel empowered by that experience. And it's funny that Sarah and I both now, with our second babies, decided to have hospital
births. Yeah. Tell me about that, just because you want to write the Zagat guide to different places to have a baby? Or?
You got it.
Yeah, you know, for me, I have big babies, and my son did get stuck, and there was like a moment of scariness for not so much me in the moment, because I really didn't know what. I just knew that when they turned me over, I knew what that meant, because I'd read so much about Ina May that when they were like,
gasket maneuver?
Yeah, when they were like, turn over on all fours, I was like, shit, he's stuck, you know? Like, I knew that that's what that meant. And there wasn't a moment of, like, fear that crept in that said, like, okay, like, this isn't going to happen. It was like, what do we do to make this happen? All right, fine, I'm going to turn over. She said, turn over, let's do it. And then, you know, which is fine. And he came out, and he was great. But I am now going to do a hospital birth. But I'm also excited about embracing that.
Well, how did you plan for it? I mean, it's imminent. It's going to happen very soon.
It's very soon.
So I assume your planning is done.
How did I plan for the hospital birth?
Yeah, I mean, how does it differ from how you plan for your home birth?
It is so different. It's been so crazy because I realized that I was like, wow, I'm really behind. Like, I haven't thought about a birth plan or anything, you know? It's like, what do I need? And I was just talking to a doula friend of mine, and I was like, okay, I had to pack a hospital bag. Like, I didn't do this last time, you know? And during labor, I was drinking chicken broth and, you know, all these things. We were listening to African drum music. I was like, what do we do? And so I started, you know, putting together this, like, hospital bag with PJs and, like, all these little things. And it's also kind of exciting. I see it there in the chair every day, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's what I'm going to grab and go with. And truthfully, there really isn't a plan. Like, my plan is that I'm going to call, you know, you and my friends and be like, okay, this is happening. Here's go time. I'm going to either go to the hospital or go to a hotel nearby, depending on what time of day it is, because I live kind of far from the hospital that I'm going to.
You have an amazing OB.
Huh?
You have an amazing obstetrician.
And he's amazing.
Which is very helpful.
So excited about him. And I think the only thing so far, which this is nothing, but in my pregnancy that I was like, okay, I'm having a really wonderful pregnancy and I'm feeling very positive. You know, I'm excited about having a girl. It was a rough year with losing my dad. And I was like, you know, preparing for it. And then something happens where you're like, you know, I found out that I have group B strep positive, so I'm going to have to do antibiotics when I'm in labor.
Well, let's talk about what that is for
okay.
a sec.
Okay.
Please, first of all, I think you got it because you're so positive.
Probably.
Sorry, I have so many positives.
Yeah. Like,
what? I have a chance to be positive? I'm in.
Yeah.
Group B strep, there's different kinds of bacteria in the body. One of them is called group B streptococcus, and a lot of adults have it. And it's not harmful to us. We have it in our digestive tract primarily. But it can sometimes colonize vaginally. And if you have a vaginal colony of group B strep, then when the baby comes through, they can be exposed to that. And if they are exposed to that, they may get an infection. If they have an infection, there could be serious consequences for that. So we swab at 36, 37 weeks.
Yep.
And check. We culture it and check. And if you're positive, then to make sure that series of events doesn't take place, you get IV antibiotics during your birth. So you were hoping to not have any. Does that mean you can't go to a hotel? That they want you to come in
no,
much earlier?
No, actually my OB was like, he called me about it today because he gave me another chance to test again. And I did like every natural remedy under the sun. And I swear if I would have had a couple more days, I could have knocked it out completely.
What kind of remedies?
I was soaking organic tampons in this Greek yogurt and putting them inside of me all night long.
Flavored?
I was, what?
Flavored yogurt?
Strauss family yogurt.
Flavored?
Plain.
Just plain vanilla?
Plain.
Oh,
plain.
Not even vanilla,
no
just plain.
No sugar. Sugar's not good for that.
Gluten-free.
Garlic cloves. I was mincing them and swallowing them with water, and I was also putting them up inside of me for the evening. I was
with the yogurt, like
well, I switched out. So I would do like yogurt one night, a garlic clove the next, or I'd do a garlic clove during a nap and then like yogurt at night. I'd do yogurt up there during a shower and let it sort of drip out. That sounds gross.
Awesome.
It's true.
Sure.
Then I would do kimchi, sauerkraut, kombucha.
Eating it.
eating it during the day, not putting it in.
Okay,
bed
just making sure.
Kombucha douche. Kombucha.
No, but speaking of which, I would sit on a sitz bath of tea tree oil, apple cider vinegar, Epsom salts, and like emu oil or sesame oil or whatever it was that was the best.
So your doctor said if you were able to get rid of that colony,
yeah,
no antibiotics.
And I did knock it down. He said it was literally so much less than what it was the first time that I probably, if I would have had more time, he would have, it would have been fine. Yeah. But it was also like such a, you know, challenge and interesting thing to learn all about. And also something that I was like, oh, I wasn't positive last time, I won't be positive this time, I'm not even thinking about it. And then all of a sudden I was, and I was really disappointed the day I found out. I was super bummed, and I was like, no, I don't want to pump my body full of antibiotics and have antibiotics, you know, pumped through my kid. And I thought, like, you know, maybe this would, in the last time when I gave birth to Wyatt, he was great, but 2 days later he had a fever and we had to give him a bunch of antibiotics, and that totally bummed me out too, you know? And so it was like building back his gut bacteria and, you know, everything that he had gotten through the birth process. And so immediately it was like the next day I was like, okay, I'm on it. It's fine. If this happens, I'm going to be okay with it. But it was interesting because that was probably the one thing that I hadn't thought about. And then it was sort of like, okay, well, this is,
here it is.
There's something. There's
maybe,
something.
Maybe you can retest in a week if she another week. In there.
I think you're having a baby before that.
Yes. No, I definitely.
And if the baby comes through, because my wife was GBS positive with our third, yeah, and the baby came so fast there was no time for antibiotics. Wow. So, and they don't care if the baby moves through that quickly. The, you know, the
yeah,
risk,
I mean, that's
is,
what he said too. But yeah, he, but so he did say, come to the hospital when you're like three, when it's like 3 minutes apart and really strong contractions. He's like, unless your water breaks. If your water breaks, you got to come sooner just so we can get some antibiotics in you. But otherwise, like, let it be big, strong.
So are you taking the whole team to the hotel?
I don't know.
And then to the hospital? Is it, I mean, are we?
You will be following me wherever I go.
I will follow you wherever you go. I'm just wondering how many people are in the parade.
The Sofitel's got to be hip to this birth plan by now. Like, I've had so many clients that labor at the Sofitel and then walk across.
Oh, yeah.
They've got to be like, oh, my God, another pregnant woman.
I'm sure.
Yeah, when you walk in with that grimace and leaking amniotic fluid, it's kind of obvious.
It's kind of obvious. I don't know. I really don't know. I'm not worried about it.
It's just going to go with the flow. Ride.
Yeah. And also, like, it could end up just being, you know, me, Eric, my doula may not even make it because she's out of town until after. And there's another doula that's a backup, but she has multiple births. And I have you, who's also a doula, and you're going to be there. And my son has been watching. He's almost three.
But wait, is he going to be there?
Yeah. I've been showing him all these birth videos, and he's so excited. And he was telling Dr. Goldberg about them, about the birth videos. You know, he was like talking about, I go, so what happens when a woman's in labor? And he goes, ugh. You know, like that. And then I go, and then what else happens? And he goes, and then the baby comes out of her vagina, and then the doctor wipes the blood off, and everything's okay. You know, it's like, he was like obsessed with the fact that the baby had blood all over his
back.
Oh
my God. Oh my God.
And so, anyway, so I mean, if he's comfortable with me while I'm in labor, then I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be there.
He will be pure comic relief. He's so funny.
He really would be really so funny. Yeah. So fun.
I'm planning on having Birdie as well.
You are?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, that's great.
All right. So what's your plan? You have a little more time, but not a lot.
Yeah, I have, I think, 4 more months. Well, my plan, we bought a house in Adelaide, South Australia, so we were always going to have Christmas in Adelaide. So then when I found out I was due at the end of November, early December-ish, I was like, well, why don't we just have the baby in Australia and we can birth there? And there's this great system in Australia. It's a midwifery program, so you don't have a doctor, you have a midwife, and this whole floor of a hospital is just purely midwives. No doctors come onto the floor. So I can still have a midwife-led birth, but I can also birth in the water. Every room has these massive birthing pools. So I'm excited about that, the idea of birthing in a hospital setting. And then like having a midwife and being able to potentially have a water birth, which would be such a dream.
Well, they have water birth at the hospital.
With at the hospital. Yeah. And I don't know if they offer that here. You would know.
Not really. No, you can labor in the tubs, and they're not very comfortable tubs, but
you're not allowed to birth in them.
Right. In Los Angeles, there are several cities where they have great hospital birthing centers with tubs and midwives.
Yeah. And I had an issue with my placenta straight after the birth, which I would have had to have transferred after I had given birth at home if I had had a home birth.
Was it not coming out?
It just didn't come out. It got ripped out. It basically got ripped
everything
out of me.
Inside you wants to stay.
Yeah, it's that's like, what it I'm seems staying. Like. Yeah. It came out like in pieces. There were holes in my placenta.
Oh, wow.
So I was told, I don't know, maybe you would know more about this, but I was told that there is a higher percentage that could happen. It could happen again.
Sure.
So that's also another reason why I decided on the hospital birth.
Okay. But now you said you might not be in Adelaide.
Well, I just found out my husband might be getting this show.
Wow.
And if that happens, that shoots over this side of the world. Uh-huh. So I would do it here. I have the same OB as Sarah.
Oh, wonderful.
So again, I'm going to have like the same crew of people.
The same team.
You can come. Yeah, you'll I'd be happy there. To. It'll be great.
Bodhi will be there.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be perfect.
It'll just be, yeah. Thank you for joining us on the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. That concludes part two of the Zen Mamas. For notes, links, and pics from today's podcast, visit informedpregnancy.com. Your questions and comments are always welcome via email at info@informedpregnancy.com.
I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.